I'm Janice Dean. This is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, February 19th, 2018. I'm Eric Schoen. School shootings. One nation has largely stopped them.
You will see more guns when you will travel in Israel, but you will see that the people who are carrying those guns are professionals who know what to do.
And I'm Michael Needham. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
In the wake of the tragic Parkland, Florida school shootings that killed 17, politicians are now pressing for ways to prevent such continuing carnage. From failures by law enforcement, the FBI not investigating tips about confessed gunman, former student Nicholas Cruz, to Cruz apparently falling through the cracks of their mental health system, to local police called to his home more than three dozen times, to Cruz being able to buy an AR-15 assault-style semi-automatic weapon legally in Florida. The measures that many say could have prevented this massacre were not in place. One nation has basically put a stop to such terror, Israel, even though the Jewish state faces the terrorist threat every day. It has taken a combination of increased school safety steps, strict gun laws, and proactive law enforcement, such as scouring social media and identifying potential terrorists, to largely prevent the gun violence that we have seen in our country.
Unfortunately, as you mentioned, Eric, we have the hands-on experience with dealing with such acts.
Israeli Ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon.
I think the lessons to be learned is, first of all, that we need to invest in intelligence. When you see somebody posting on social media a threat, you have to take it seriously. You have to look at it. You have to look at this person calling for questioning and not to ignore it. This is what we are trying to do when we see terrorists putting posts before the committing a suicide attack. Sometimes we were even able to prevent them from leaving their town because we got the knowledge from the social media. The second step, which we take in Israeli schools, which is a major step, but I think, you know, it's a costly one, we place a guard at the gates of every school in Israel. It is costly. It is not easy. This is part of our reality. We got used to it by now. For every kid that comes to school, the guard will welcome him. He will know the kid. And if something will look suspicious, somebody will try to come in, he will stop him and will question him. So I think those are the main lessons that we have to take into consideration when we're analyzing this devastating act.
Let me take two of those right now. For example, you talk about guards. The teachers, they are not armed, but the guards are armed. And when Israeli school children go on field trips, for example, they're IDF soldiers or police security guards who are armed and accompany the children.
Absolutely. Whenever you have an extracurricular activity, you will have somebody who is escorting the group. And what we see in Israel, you see people with guns, but you see the good people that are carrying guns. Those will be the army, the police, you know, the military personnel. Whenever they will go home, they will carry a rifle or a gun with them. So in case of emergency, they will be the first one to react. They will be the first one to neutralize the threat. But you don't want to see those people who don't need to carry guns. We have strict regulations about carrying guns in the street unless you are a military or police personnel.
Obviously, Israel does not have our Second Amendment. Gun ownership basically is not a right, but a privilege. And you mentioned the strict standards. For example, you have to be, what, over the age of 27 to buy one and get a license? And they limit you to, what, 50 rounds per year?
They will ask you first why you need the gun. So basically, if you walk in an area where you feel that you are threatened, or you need a reason. It's not like here that you don't need to explain. You can go to a store in a few states and buy whatever you want. And then you will be monitored. I carry a gun when I'm in Israel, so every 2 years I will have to go and to a checkpoint, and they will examine my ability to use the weapon. So it is more monitored, and I think it is the right way to do it. But at the same time, as I mentioned, you will see more guns when you will travel in Israel, but you will see that the people who are carrying those guns are professionals who know what to do. And in case of an emergency, those will be the ones who will protect the civilians.
Here in our country, students have announced they're organizing a march in Washington on March 24th, dubbed the March for Our Lives, demonstrating for an end to school shootings and gun violence. On Saturday, thousands rallied for gun control measures in Fort Lauderdale, including some survivors of the Parkland shooting. Florida student Sophia Wagner.
And if that nobody passes legislation, then we're going to vote them out of office and vote for people who will pass legislation so that my friends and my peers stop dying in school.
Florida State Senator Gary Farmer, a Democrat, responded to those who believe their Second Amendment rights would be violated with gun control measures.
No constitutional right is absolute. We have freedom of speech, but you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater. There are reasonable safety restrictions that can be placed on every right. And all we're asking for is that these sensible gun protection laws be passed.
If you are an officer in the Army, you will get automatically a license. That's what happened in my case. But if you were not an officer, you would have to go through the examinations. And every 2 years, you're going to have to go to a doctor that he will evaluate you. You're going to have to go to a shooting range. And you're going to have to prove that you know how to handle the gun and you do it responsibly. So those measures make sure that the people who are carrying guns in Israel are responsible.
It really is controlled, it seems. And finally, on this subject, you mentioned scouring social media. We know that at least two cases in this horrendous case in Parkland, that the FBI did not act on tips about the disturbing behavior of the accused gunman. The IDF, as you said, they go through the Facebook postings and they would even visit homes, talk to parents. They seem to be very proactive.
Well, unfortunately, today we saw with the social media that many of those who commit those horrible crimes, before they do that, they announce it. It goes with terrorists, it goes with insane acts of violence like we saw here in Florida. So many times you will get a warning. The question is if somebody will be able to monitor it and to act fast to those warnings. And I would prefer that, you know, even if they will check five times and it will be a false alarm, it is better than to ignore one case because we see the casualties, we see the devastation, and I think we should take any threat seriously.
Sadly, that apparently did not happen here, and certainly the people of Israel know this firsthand too often about what can happen. Talking about the threats, obviously the greatest threat to your country and to the West at large is Iran. And Iran has been trying to build up its influence on the border in Syria, as also in Lebanon. The Israeli Defense Forces lost that F-16 that crashed last week. What is your message to Tehran, and what do you want the UN to do in order to try and push back Tehran's expansion?
Well, first, I would advise any of our adversaries not to try our military might and our determination. We will do whatever is necessary to protect our citizens, and we cannot ignore the activities of Iran in Syria. Unfortunately, today in Iran, there are a lot of free money because of the bad agreement that was signed with the Iranian, and they use that money to expand the terror net in the region. You see it in Yemen, you see it in Lebanon, and now you see it in Syria, and they are trying to build their presence in the border with Israel on the Golan Heights.
We'll be back with Israeli Ambassador Danny Danon.
This is Michael Needham with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
We're back with Israeli UN Ambassador Danny Danon.
We cannot allow the Iranian build those factories next to our border. And that's why we told them we will not sit idly by. We will take the initiative, and we will not allow the Iranian to pose a new threat to Israel.
Israel has been targeting some of the weapons depots near the Damascus airport, for example, tracking flights from Tehran that apparently are bringing arms. Do you think that the mullahs in Tehran got the message last week when Israel did respond by attacking that drone control center that sent that drone over your border?
Well, Eric, when you look at this incident, when you have Iranian drone crossing the border, entering Israel, and today we know that those drones, they can carry with them weapons, rockets, missiles, you name it. It was a clear violation of our sovereignty, and we reacted to that, and we will continue to do that. And I think the Iranians should know that we will not be quiet, and we will not allow them to build their strengths next to our border. I know that they are trying. They created a similar situation in Lebanon when today you have the Hezbollah right on our border. And when I visited the border with Ambassador Nikki Haley, she was able to see the Hezbollah fighters on the border, despite Resolution 1701 of the Security Council. We don't want to create a similar reality with the border with Syria. That's exactly what Iran wants, to create another Hezbollah, another Iranian-controlled regime that will threaten Israel from another side.
Iran is said to be violating UN resolutions, whether it's the ballistic missile system, and you just mentioned U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley. For so many years, the United Nations, where you serve, has been so against Israel, many say anti-Semitic. What's your view of our ambassador and the progress that you've made there?
Well, Ambassador Haley, she's a strong leader, and we can see that it's effective. We see the results, but it's still there is a lot to do. Many reforms need to be done at the UN, but we saw some changes with the UNIFIL, the peacekeeping operation mandate, and I think we will see more things coming from the U.S., and I think that is the main message of the UN. We need to reform the UN. We can do good things with the UN, but we need to see a different direction, and we should be bold. We should not be afraid to say the truth about Iran. We should not be afraid to say the truth about those who seek to destabilize the region. And I think it's the only way to move forward. And we saw it with the leadership of President Trump and Ambassador Haley, that we get things done even in the UN.
And have you noticed, Ambassador, in your tenure there, a sense of a softening of the anti-Israeli stance? We saw the celebration of the 70th birthday anniversary of the creation of the Jewish state. Vice President Mike Pence addressed that. That was held in the Queens building where the original delegates voted to create the State of Israel. There was a very emotional Holocaust Remembrance Day at which the youngest person who was saved by Oscar Schindler spoke, and you were sitting there in the front row. Has there been some softening and or acceptance of Israel, do you think, under the Trump administration and under your efforts? Do you see progress?
Absolutely, yes. My approach is to be proactive, not to wait for the Palestinians to incite and to blame Israel for everything, but to show the real face of Israel. That's why we held the beautiful event in the Queens Museum when we had a reenactment of the vote that took place 70 years ago. That's what happened when we had the Holocaust Remembrance Day, and we will continue to do that. And I think more and more countries understand today that Israel is not the problem in the Middle East. Israel is a solution to the problems. Eric, even some Arab countries, which publicly will not recognize Israel, privately will cooperate with Israel, because they understand that we can help them fight terrorism, we can help them fight radicals. That's why we see that the assumption that Israel is the solution is becoming more and more accepted in the UN.
And on Tuesday, Ambassador, tomorrow, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas will address the United Nations. What do you expect him to say, and what do you expect to respond?
Abbas will come to speak to the Security Council this coming Tuesday. And unfortunately, instead of driving 12 minutes from his office in Ramallah to Jerusalem to negotiate with Prime Minister Netanyahu, he's flying 12 hours to the UN. And I'm sure he will blame Israel, he will blame the US, he will blame everybody, but he should blame himself. I think he's the problem, that we don't see anything happening in terms of the negotiations. And today, when President Trump is trying to reignite the process, Abbas is coming to the UN in order to tell everybody publicly that he will not cooperate with the U.S. and Israel.
And finally, Ambassador, Israel always seems to be really, as they call it in the military, the tip of the spear. You face the threats, you face the terrorist threats, and seem to be so advanced and get out in front of a lot of this. What is the strength of the Israeli people? I once, 2 years ago, talked to and interviewed former Prime Minister Shimon Peres, and he said it was the human spirit, that when the founding fathers of Israel started, there were no friends, there was no money, they didn't have weapons, they had rocks and soil. To what do you ascribe the spirit of the Israeli people to face the threats that you face and that we can learn and take lessons from?
Eric, many times I'm being asked, how can I survive in a hostile environment like in the UN? And I say that we are optimistic. Despite all the challenges, all the threats, we are very proud of what we have achieved, and we are optimistic. And the same goes for my brothers and sisters in Israel. Despite all the threats, We are building a modern Jewish democracy, and we take a lot of pride of it. And we will continue to be optimistic about the future. And this April, we're going to celebrate the 70th anniversary of Israel. And anyone who will come to Israel will be able to see what we have accomplished in short 70 years, despite all the threats, despite all the risks. I think it shows that when you believe in something, you can achieve it.
Israeli Ambassador Danny Danon, my great thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Tuesday,
the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, is scheduled to address the UN Security Council. The remarks follow the controversial U.S. decision to move its embassy to Jerusalem. Abbas has indicated he will ask the UN for full membership status for the Palestinians.
Wednesday,
the start of the annual Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington. President Trump is expected to be among the speakers.
Thursday,
National Margarita Day, at least according to the day's sponsor, a tequila maker. The official website says the first margarita was mixed in the 1930s or 40s. No one is certain exactly when, perhaps because they had too many margaritas. And that's a look at the week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Michael Needham. Michael.
What's on your mind?
Although President Trump did not mention repealing and replacing Obamacare during his State of the Union address, his newly released budget did call on Congress to replace that disastrous law. It would do so with legislation modeled after the Graham-Cassidy-Heller-Johnson block grant proposal, which was debated last fall. That is good news for all of us. But there's even better news. For the past 4 months, leading thinkers from across the conservative policy community have come together to refine and improve upon that concept. Based upon conversations with lawmakers and administration officials, there is more consensus today than we have ever seen on how to repeal and replace Obamacare. The goal is simple: take power away from Washington bureaucrats and allow states to innovate. Of course, any plan must ensure that Americans are not trapped in a failing government-run system either. There is no freedom in that. This emerging consensus plan would protect against that possibility as well, ensuring patients are truly in charge of their health insurance and their health care. The need for action cannot be overstated. One study found health insurance plans for 2018 would be unaffordable for 54% of families buying on the Obamacare exchanges. Premiums and deductibles are set to go even higher next year, and people will get those notices right before the midterm elections. Congress must act, and this time, a real plan is emerging. I'm Michael Needham. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.